Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself. Why did you get into blogging?
My whole personal growth journey started when I was very young. I was about 16 years old.
The enlightened masters have taught us that the only way out is to go in.
Happiness is equals to progress. If you're not progressing, you're not going to feel happy. No, be with yourself. Be with yourself. Mm. Date you. Get to know you. Because you have so much complexity within you.
Having confidence is great, but confidence without clarity is a disaster.
Educate yourself. In this information age, there's no excuse.
You cannot give anything to someone where you don't have it yourself.
Yeah. Fill your cup first. That's why they say don't make important decisions when you're tired, when you're hungry, because you're just not in the right frame of mind.
The person who knows others is intelligent, but the person who truly knows himself is wise, and that's true wisdom. Celine, welcome to the Shift with CJ podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. I am so happy to be here with you.
Thank you for being here. I'm really excited because I have so many questions for you, especially around your new book that is going to be launched soon called The Nomadic Soul. But first, before we get into those exciting questions, you have such an interesting backstory from when you started your blog, then your podcast. I want you to tell our listeners, why did you get into blogging? What was the backstory?
Well, the inspiration behind my blog, well, first of all, I want to start out by saying that my whole personal growth journey started when I was very young. I was about 16 years old, and I started watching the Oprah Winfrey Show. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with her show, but in the 90s, she used to bring all these personal growth authors and these spiritual leaders, and I would just absorb it like a sponge. I don't know why. That was pretty young, if you think about it. And I started buying their books, and I was reading it voraciously, taking notes. So that early inclination was there from a pretty young age. So I've been in this whole world for such a long time, and I just felt like it was a natural step for me to take. I was a life coach for a few years, and then I was sending out a lot of newsletters to my clients. And they told me that I have a gift for writing. They said, "We love your newsletter." And then I said, "Okay, I could probably do something with this." So I had a look at all my newsletters, and I said, "Why don't I create a blog?" Because blogging was just at its inception at that time. It was starting to pick up. And I said, okay, I need to get on this bandwagon and start. And at the same time, I was also just coming out of a very challenging phase in my life. And I was feeling very raw. So I felt like that state of mind, that state of heart was perfect to start writing. And I feel that by doing that, at that point of time in my life, was very important because readers could pick up on my authenticity. They could feel that. When I started, my blog posts were pretty short, but later on, they became much longer once I realized that people were liking the content and were really responding. But yeah, the early influence of my life and what I was going through at that time was what inspired me to start writing. So, yeah.
Interesting. And then the writing newsletters to a blog, then to a podcast, now to books. You've already written a book called Beautiful Redefined.
Yes.
And now Nomadic Soul. When I look at the title of the book, I think it's about traveling. But when I look at the subtitle of the book, I know there's something more deeper inside. So let me ask you this question. Why did you select the name Nomadic Soul? What's the story behind that?
Okay, so it's a bunch of things. First of all, I'm born and raised in the UAE, in the Arabian Gulf. And we all know that they had a lot of nomads here. You know, before this became the beautiful place that it is. And so that influence came from the fact that I'm a child of the Middle East. So that I had that picture in my mind. And then I thought, okay, why do these guys go on these really difficult, potentially dangerous kind of voyages? They are in these really harsh conditions in the desert. So why are they doing it? Yeah, people say migration was part of our species, like it's something we did just to find greener pastures, to find water, to find food, to find cattle. But I think they were doing it for other reasons. I feel that they were doing it because they were kind of searching for something deeper within themselves. Because when you're in a place like that, you kind of live without any labels. You live without any kind of limitations, social pressures when you're out there in nature. So I think I thought that perhaps taking that idea of going on a voyage, going on a sacred quest can work for us, because that way we can kind of fine-tune the inner compass that we have. And that is what I call the nomadic soul. And also, I've seen that the theme of travel is very prevalent in a lot of nonfiction books and a lot of religious texts as well. Mm-hmm. Confucius, Moses, all of them talk about going on this holy pilgrimage. Nonfiction books like Paulo Coelho's Alchemist, then you have Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert. All of them talk about going on this holy journey to find themselves. So I have to mention that when I talk about travel, I don't necessarily mean physical travel. We can travel to the inner landscapes within us. There are so many layers to us. So having that sense of adventure, that curiosity, that openness can help us experience a sense of transcendence, connectivity, and just wonder. And I feel like we've lost that over the years for so many reasons that we can get into later. So that's why I think I thought The Nomadic Soul was a perfect title for this book, because I wanted people to understand that they need to incorporate movement physically and internally, mm-hmm. because we are meant to evolve. We are meant to move. We're meant to kind of move forward in our lives, because if we stand still and we don't progress, we atrophy, we mm-hmm. decay, our soul dies. Mm-hmm. I know Tony Robbins, one of my earliest influences, said that happiness is equals to progress. If you're not progressing, you're not going to feel happy. Mm-hmm. So there has to be some form of movement mm-hmm. In your life, because you can't stay in the same place. You cannot. Mm-hmm. So
interesting. That also reminds me of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yes.
And that also is like a pyramid. And it also says, like, you, at every stage of life, once you have your basic needs met, then you will have to travel upwards. Mm-hmm. And at the top of the pyramid, something which he was never able to write completely, is self-actualization and self-realization, which is, again, a lot of the religious, or like, let's say, a lot of the enlightened masters have taught us that the only way out is to go in. And that's something that a lot of people these days aren't doing. Yeah, of course, there are countries like Bali and Mexico where you get this, I think they even have a nomadic visa. And some of the stats that I was looking was fascinating, because in the World Economic Forum says that at this point, there are about 35 million nomads out there. So people are moving away from their, in terms of physicality, they're moving away, but they're also looking for opportunities. They're looking for novelty. They're looking for excitement. They're looking for adventure. They're looking for, I think, friends as well, because one of the biggest epidemics that we are in and we will be facing is loneliness. Mm-hmm. A lot of Western societies, they're facing this already, and this leads to mental health issues.
Yes.
I think the World Health Organization said in 2040, one in four people will have a mental health disorder. And a lot of the scientists and doctors that I've spoken to, they're like, oh, they're too generous. It's going to be much faster than that.
Yeah.
And that just blows my mind away.
Yes.
That just blows my mind away. And yeah, interesting. So that's where the...
That's why I dedicated a whole section to one of the broader needs of the nomadic soul, which is connection.
Mm-hmm. Can we speak about connection?
Yeah, how absolutely. So the subcategories for connection in my book, I've broken it down into three of them. Connection with ourselves, mm-hmm. so getting into our interior world. Connection with other living beings, mm-hmm. so that means nature, animals, other people. And connection to a force bigger than ourselves, a greater force, which you know you could do through religion, through mm-hmm. creativity, through... you know, whatever way suits you, whatever spiritual path suits you. So I think those are the needs of connection that we need to meet for us to feel that sense of, to feel anchored, to feel like we belong somewhere. And I feel like people don't feel like they belong anymore. Our communities and our family structures have steadily been being broken down, especially in individualistic cultures. Our collectivistic cultures, we still have family intact and we're still close to family. But in the individualistic cultures in the West, mostly, the family ties are breaking. Children are feeling more and more isolated. Their parents are getting divorced. And teenagers are feeling alienated from their friends because they're on social media all day. Mm-hmm. Connecting with people who they don't know, but they would love because they're their followers. But there's that, they don't feel like they have that sense of support. They don't have people who understand them. And we need someone to understand us, to get us, even if it's just one person.
Mm-hmm.
Because we humans are social beings. Mm-hmm. We are built for connection. We're built for love. We're built for vulnerability. If we don't have that, we will wither like a flower.
There's an ancient text, it's a book actually, collection of verses called the Bhagavad Gita. And in that, Krishna, who is this divine figure, talks to a warrior prince and he tells him, he who sees himself in everyone and he who sees everyone in himself can actually reach the highest point in nature called the Brahman. So he can get this... divine consciousness. But for that, you need to make sure that you see others as yourself and you see yourself as everyone. And this includes the plants, the animals, the birds, the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole concept of yoga, which goes more than just twisting and turning and, you know, all the yoga that we see.
Yeah. It's a journey. State of mind.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a journey. Yeah. It's a journey of oneself within themselves. To find themselves and to find everything else. So it's that whole connection piece that, very interestingly, like you put it, do you think social media is the only thing that's ruining this whole connection piece, or are there some other factors?
Yeah, like I said, the breakdown of the family. We don't have community as much as we used to. Back in the day, you know, people, you knew your neighbors. Mm-hmm. And people lived closer to each other. They were dependent on each other. Like they'd go to someone's house and be like, hey, can I have a cup of sugar? You know, that sort of relationship was there. Doesn't everyone knew everyone. You know, I was recently in Egypt and I felt like I was in time capsule because a lot of the things they do there, like now it would seem dated, but it felt dated, but I liked being in that kind of place where they still upheld some of the values that we don't have in modern cities. Like everyone knew each other. Mm. There was a sense of brotherhood. And even like a taxi driver was like, hey, how are you doing? Like on the road, like, I don't know if they really know each other. And there was this warmth and just, you know, they didn't pretend like they were strangers. Mm-hmm. Like they were like, you're my brother, you're my sister. Mm-hmm. And they acted accordingly. So there was a real warmth in the air and everyone cooperating with each other, helping each other out, even if they don't know them personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like we have that warmth anymore because we have become so much about ourselves, so egocentric. We want to reach the top of the ladder.
Mm.
And it's like dog-eat-dog world now.
Mm-hmm.
So we've lost that sense of community and brotherhood and sisterhood, unfortunately.
We're always running. To achieve something.
Yes. And that's society programs us for that.
How do you step out of the program that society puts on you? Because again, a lot of people are, let's take a generalized example, right? You're going to school, your only motivation is to get good marks so you can go to a good university. You go to a university, your only motivation is to, you know, party and study because then you can get a good job. Then when you get a good job, then you are only motivated. This is what the society teaches you. This is the perfect
life. That's a template for
success. That's the perfect life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have to get married and then you have to get kids and you have to get a house.
Absolutely.
And when we actually take a step back, and if people start noticing it, when you're in school, you're frustrated and you're complaining, you don't want to study to get those higher marks. When you're in university, you want to do everything else apart from, like, you know, getting to that top rank. You're frustrated. When you don't have a job, you're frustrated because you don't have a job.
Yeah.
When you have a job, you're frustrated because of your boss. When you don't have money, you're frustrated when you don't have money. And when you have money, then you suffer the taxes.
Hamster in the wheel, right?
Exactly.
You just keep going and going.
I guess whatever the society, the cultural norm is, and the society kind of like pushes us to do, the people who have run that, they look back and say, like, I wasn't happy doing any of them, but I still did it because I thought anything else would be wrong. So how do we kind of like be aware enough or conscious enough to say, like, hey, this is what everyone's doing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to follow the sheep mentality or the herd mentality.
Yeah.
And like, just take a step back and analyze, is this something what I really want? Is this something that my soul really wants? Is this something that my, is this something that's aligned with my purpose or my ikigai or whatever?
Yeah.
So how do you see this situation?
Yeah. So I want to say that it's not easy. Because we are, as I said before, we're social beings. We want to fit into the clan. We don't want to ruffle any feathers. We want everybody to like us.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when we were cavemen, if you did something that the rest of the group didn't like, you were basically kicked out. You were kicked out. And, you know, a saber-toothed tiger would eat you up. So we are instinctually, you know, we are programmed. We want people to like us. We want, especially people that we love and we care about. So it takes a lot of courage. And I say that because I had to do that myself. Like, I was programmed by society. I did everything that I was supposed to do. Went to college, find the guy who looks good on paper, did all of that. Mm-hmm. And I did not feel like I was myself. I did not, because I just knew I was not in alignment with my ikigai, my path. I just felt this sense of apathy.
Mm-hmm.
I was there. I had so much abundance around me. And I said, does not feel right.
Mm-hmm.
So making that transformation has to begin from within and getting clarity about, okay, who am I? What is it that I want? And that's something I mentioned in The Nomadic Soul. First one is developing an authentic identity.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go within and get clear about what are my values? What's important to me? What do I really want my life to look like? What is my vision? And you may not get it all right. At least have something. And as you go along, you will refine it. You will change it. It will happen a lot. But start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
For me, journaling was really helpful. I had coaches, I had therapists, I talked about it. So I had to date myself. People are always like, they're all about dating and having friends and they want to be with other people. No, be with yourself. Be with yourself. Mm. Date you, get to know you, because you have so much complexity within you, you know? So get to know yourself. And once you have that clarity, be confident in what you do. And find something that you can do which will make you useful. It doesn't have to be your job. Find something where you can contribute. Something. Even if you're a mom or a dad, you are contributing in some way. You're raising the future generation. But do something that makes you feel useful. Because I feel like if you're just living a life of materialism and just kind of chasing shiny objects, you are just not going to feel fulfilled. I'm sorry. You're just not.
Mm-hmm.
People who pretend they're fulfilled will eventually realize that's not it. They're just not going to feel a satisfaction. I mean, how many celebrities and affluent, rich people we've heard who just are miserable?
Who suicided?
Who kill themselves. Yeah. Why? Because they sense, they have that feeling of they feel empty inside.
Hmm.
They feel, of course, money helps. I'm not saying like money doesn't help. It's great. It's better to have money than to not have money.
Okay? But does it only help?
To a certain extent,
yeah.
Right? After that point, you got to have some spiritual anchor, some kind of anchor that's going to make you feel like you are contributing to society in some way. It doesn't have to be like a Mahatma Gandhi kind of thing. It can be something simple, really. And I think that if people find that, they would really solve most of their problems, I believe.
Reminds me of Lao Tzu from Tao Te Ching. He says,
"Oh, I love that
the Lao person, awesome. The person who knows others, is intelligent, but the person who truly knows himself is wise, and that's true wisdom."
Yeah.
So once you kind of, and that there's the same concept like you're sharing, go inside.
Yes.
Ask the right questions.
Ask the right questions.
Get clear. Don't just be okay. Having confidence is great. But confidence without clarity is a disaster.
Exactly.
In which most of the people that we see these days.
Yeah. And I have to say, get feedback from others also. Like, because you might have blind spots. You might see yourself, you know, there's a risk of grandiosity, seeing yourself as more than you actually are. Or you can, you know, inferiority, seeing yourself as, you know, less capable than you are. So I think it's good to have feedback from people you trust, from a therapist, from a coach, so you can gain perspective on yourself, that outside perspective.
Someone who's not biased at all.
Someone who's not biased, and of course, who is a well-wisher.
What was the term you mentioned?
There are snakes out there. Grandi- you need to watch out. Sorry? Grandiosity.
Grandiosity. Okay, that's a new
term. Yeah, I learned that from Robert Greene. That really hit me in a big way when I read it, because I thought of so many people when I read that. People who think they're larger than life. He talks about, the example he gives is about Michael Eisner. He was the former CEO of Disney. And he was on a good streak. Like, he was a guy who was behind like The Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, and all the classics that did super well at the box office. But then he got ahead of himself. He overestimated his ability to lead the company. He didn't listen to advisors. And then they started going downhill at a certain point. And he said that, well, he was suffering from the sense of grandiosity. He got too overconfident. He believed that he was omnipotent. He could do anything. Nothing he does could go wrong. And he also had like a lot of people who were singing his praises. Like, you're great. You're amazing. This is the thing, you know, rich and famous people have to watch out for. Because if you are having all these people around you who are just singing your praise, you're going to be prone to grandiosity. You need critics as well. People who can say, hey, you know.
And then, you know, in his case, when you have a perfect situation like this where you have seen some sort of a success, and then a lot of people are kind of, they anchor you in a way. And then what happens is two cognitive biases kick in. One is the anchoring bias, which is when someone leads you to an impression, oh, you're great. And then you see a little bit of success, your dopamine systems, your reward systems in the brain get triggered.
Absolutely.
And then you have this confirmation bias, where you think what you believe is much better and greater than anyone else. And you often disregard any other opinion because it doesn't match with your initial belief. So that's so.
Yeah, I mean, all the kings and emperors, that's what they had. Their court was filled with, you know, what they call sycophants, people who are just like, they wouldn't dare say, hey, what you did was stupid there. They would not like. So, I mean, when you have power, you have to use it wisely. What's that saying? With great power comes great responsibility.
Hashtag Spider-Man.
Hashtag Spider-Man, yeah. I believe Voltaire said that.
Okay.
French philosopher.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I just saw it in the Spider-Man
anyway, it's okay. Yeah. You could still say Spider-Man. But yeah, so if you're in a state of power or privilege, you've been given a lot of freedoms, you have more money, or you have, you know, you just have a good life compared to other people, you should use it wisely. Yeah, and people forget that.
And we've seen, like you mentioned, we've seen this as a recurring theme in history.
Oh,
every
yeah.
time power, every time people double down on their power, their ability to affect people, it kind of like creates this, kind of messes with their brain. So why
it gets to their head.
Yeah.
It's intoxicating. It's really intoxicating.
How does someone
But not all of them. There are examples in history of leaders who were able to put that in perspective and rule with compassion, rule responsibly. There are a lot of them.
Yeah, I guess compassion is the thing.
Oh, yeah. You got to be an empathetic leader. You have to be. Mm-hmm. You're leading people.
What if you're not leading people? What if someone listening to this podcast is just...
Everyone's a leader. It just, the scale doesn't matter. You're a leader of your life, essentially. You're the CEO of your life. You run the show. You make the decisions. You handle your schedule. Or as a parent, you're a leader of your kids. I mean, that doesn't mean you lord over them, but you have that responsibility. You know?
So everyone who's listening, start identifying yourself as a leader.
As a leader, yeah.
That's more empowering.
Yeah, of course. And that makes you more accountable, makes you more responsible. Yeah, because without those two, like, you're just going to, like, you're not going to take your life seriously, and you're just going to, like, be like a leaf floating in the wind.
And this brings me back to clarity, because a lot of the people... So here's... A lot of people think when people join the gym, they don't go because they're not seeing results, or they signed up on January 1st and they had this New Year's resolution. And all of those things matter.
Yeah.
But the main reason why people quit gym is because when they land up in the gym, they don't know what to do. They might hear like, hey, this workout is great for you. It's over like a lot of choices and the inability to figure out and make the right decision in the moment of what to do. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why majority of the people don't go to the gym. And that's why, again, personal trainers and all of these guys have a good business, because is that confusion when you're actually there?
Yeah.
You're not clear about something. So again, this brings back to the whole clarity concept. In order for you to take responsibility and accountability, you should at least be clear in which path you're heading.
Yeah.
And of course, the paths keep changing and like life keeps changing. But if you have a direction, then, you know, it'll be much more easier.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to your example about the gym and being lost about, you know, which machine should I use? Mm-hmm. How should I do it? How many reps should I do? Educate yourself. In this information age, there's no excuse. Mm-hmm. There's no excuse. Like when I grew up, like we had those clunky encyclopedias. But now it's like you can go on the internet, watch videos, listen to podcasts, read books. Like what I did is how I educated myself about fitness is that I subscribed to 3 fitness magazines. I read everything. I underlined everything. I made notes. I had a couple of trainers. But then I'm self-educated. Mm-hmm. You know, I learned about nutrition. I spoke to a dietitian. So educate yourself. If it's that important to you, you have to invest yourself in it. You have to go all the way in. Mm. Don't give that responsibility to somebody else. Like, of course, get a trainer, but that trainer is not a magician. He's not going to like wave a wand and make you skinny or slim or whatever you're aiming for. You have to take matters into your own hand. Mm-hmm. It's like when you go to a doctor, doctors are needed. They have specialized knowledge, but you also have a responsibility to take care of yourself. I believe in the holistic model of health. Mm-hmm. Like medicines, first of all, I'm not a big fan of medicines. I think big pharma is out to get us. Mm-hmm. I really do believe that. I don't remember the last time I've taken medication. And I'm not saying here that you don't need them. They have their place, but you have to do what it takes to stay in that state of health and, you know, take care of your diet, take care of your fitness. I mean, it's really simple, but people make it complicated. If you get the basics right, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. But it's just that having that, taking that initiative, having that drive, having that ability to stay consistent, that's what's missing. It's people complicate life. They really do. But there are certain things that if you just follow those guidelines and you are consistent and you are able to like change your course whenever needed, you're strategic about it, you can get there. And this applies to all areas of your life, not just your health, your work, everything. You just have to apply yourself.
Yeah, no matter what kind of trainer you have, the trainer is not going to do the push-ups for
you. I've seen trainers, and there's some trainers who just don't care. They're on their phone. They're like, do 5 more. Or they're just not making them do exercises that are very effective for them. Like someone who's overweight, like make them do cardio. Like, you know what I mean? So I'm not saying they're not helpful at all. Something's better than nothing. But the point I'm trying to make is you can't give all the responsibility to someone else. Even in a relationship, you can't expect that person to be in charge of your happiness. That's on you. Of course, they can enhance your life, but they can't make you happier than you already are.
Mm-hmm.
If you're expecting a prince or princess to rescue you, I'm sorry, it's not going to work. I fell for that trap. It's not going to work. The happiness thing has to be solved by you first.
Mm-hmm. So is this whole notion about the happiness comes from within you?
Comes from within, right? Yes.
It's not, and a lot of, like you mentioned, like actors and celebrities who have everything that most people would want, the fame, the money, the power, the parties, the, the everything. So they're not anymore, like they are happy, but they're not happier because materialistic things can only get you happiness till a certain point.
Yep.
But after that, and that's only when basic needs are met. So I think
we're talking from a place of privilege. Yeah. Let's just put that out there. Yeah.
So like back in the day, the number was about $75,000. So if you had $75,000 on an average, then you could take a vacation, pay for your kids' school, like you could do all the basic things. And then after that, any like lots of money would not change. Like there would be like this, like an effect where you kind of go back to your baseline, like the hedonic treadmill.
The hedonic treadmill thing. Yes, yes.
If something happens, it's great, but it's not going to change so much. But at that point, if you invest in yourself and you invest in your own energy and you see the world in a better way, that's what's going to make you happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, there's a difference between joy and happiness. Like happiness comes from, you know, eating ice cream, comes from, you know, getting a promotion at your job. But joy is something that you have to cultivate and maintain within you. That's that bliss. That's that quiet happiness that comes from just being content and satisfied, having a calm mind. You know, happiness isn't be like, it isn't like, oh my God, yay. You know, that, yeah, that is nice, but that's not what you're aiming for. You're aiming for contentment, balance, being like, hey, my life is pretty good. It's not, there are some things I don't love. But my life's okay, and I like this journey. That's what you're aiming for.
Interesting. Makes me think of another concept in your book, primal yearnings.
Yeah.
When I saw this concept for the first time, at least the name, I wasn't familiar with it. So I'm sure a lot of people might not be familiar with it. Can you please explain what primal yearnings is?
Yeah, I actually, primal yearning touches on the need of the soul to express itself, right? To express everything within you that is characteristic of your skills, your ability, your abilities, your creativity. It's this yearning to be more, have more, and just reach the highest level of our being. So that's what that primal yearning is. It comes from that deeper sense within you. And also it's about being a good person, having a good character, having a good set of ethics and morals. So that all comes from the deeper strata of our being. We all have it, but somehow we allow ourselves to be conditioned by society that tells us that that doesn't really matter. Go for all the other, go for the trophies, go for, you know,
career, the cars, the cars, house. The...
Yeah. And we drown the voice of the nomadic soul. And hence we are not in touch with this primal yearning. Within us that is really our compass, our inner compass. If we are willing to tune in and to really get in touch with that part of ourselves, you'd get a lot of answers.
But you see primal yearnings, like this concept, even being modeled by, like, I think if we had 10 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people in the room, everyone would want to do more with their life. So whether it's for most people, it would be to earn more money. And to have more luxuries. And
nothing
cars.
Wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. We all want nice things.
So there's this inner drive, you're saying, but it's you're saying that it's not just in the material realm.
It's not in the
It starts from deep within us.
Soul level.
Soul level. Okay. When I see, when I think about this, the search for, or like the need to act on this primal yearnings, at least in the material realm, is playing with people's health, people's mental, because now people are so achievement oriented, that they're constantly like, you know, pushing the pedal to the metal when it comes to their health. They're not sleeping enough. We hear constantly that younger people are getting heart attacks.
Yes.
And it's so common these days, right?
Yeah, it is.
People under 30 as well, which traditionally never happened. You're not sleeping. You're over-caffeinated. You're working quite a lot in search of getting somewhere. But most people are destroying themselves.
Yeah.
They're destroying their relationships. And they're destroying the planet in search of that.
Yes.
And
yeah,
they never know when to stop because they don't understand when it is enough.
Yeah.
And
we're told that this is the way it is. Mm-hmm. If you want to get that dream job, you have to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Struggling is part of, which it is.
Hustler culture.
It's part of the game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I beg to differ. I don't think it has to be that way.
What's your argument for that? Like, for example, a person says, oh, you got to hustle so you can get to whatever.
Yeah.
What do you tell that person?
Have boundaries. Know what your needs are,
mm-hmm.
and make sure your needs are met. If you communicate that with your employer, if your employer is not willing to allow you to meet your needs, find another job. I know it's easy to say, but that's what you need to do. You need people who honor your needs. See, this is what I need to be at my best, to be at my optimal level.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get this, that's it. I'm not going to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be a good person. I'm going to be cranky. So acknowledging the fact that you have those needs and having the confidence to say, this is what I need. This is what I need to function. So having that self-love, that sense of self-love, that you are worthy enough to take care of yourself and communicating that with others. And they will understand that.
Mm-hmm.
They have to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And boundaries are really important.
Mm-hmm.
Like healthy boundaries. Communicate that with your partner, with your family. That's something that's come easily to me my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness. I was not a people pleaser. I was a little bit for some time in my life, but for the most part, I could say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I can still say no.
That's a superpower because a lot of people these days, or like at least the people that I know or the people that I come across, they don't know how to say no. And this, you know, they get too stressed out and burned out because of the ability of not saying no. And you touched on something really important, which is cultivating that self-love, which I think a lot of people are missing. Correct me if I'm wrong. A lot of people around the world, they want to kind of be under this illusion that they can give love to other people. But I think you cannot give something to someone. You cannot give anything to someone where you don't have it yourself.
Fill your cup first. Yeah.
So do you see this a lot as well? Like a lot of people, they're not paying enough time, attention, energy, love to themselves. Because again, like when we look at like all these ancient teachings, they always talk about, like, I think I remember one from Buddha. He says that you yourself, as much as anyone else in this universe, is worthy of your own attention and love.
Yeah. Well, I think first of all, people don't know what self-love looks like. What is that exactly? Is that a tree-hugging concept? That's so vague. So first of all, define what self-love means to you. Is it coming home after work and having a bubble bath or having, you know, time with your kids? What does self-love look like to you? Is it going and having a manicure once a month, getting a massage? What is it? How do you define self-love for yourself? How do you know that you are loving yourself?
Mm-hmm.
What are the acts? What are the practices that will make you feel good?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one thing. And what was your question about is self-love on the decline? Is that your question?
So I see it personally that it's on the decline because I see a lot of people, they just want to give away to others, but they don't want to spend time on themselves.
Yeah. So I see that more in collectivistic cultures where people feel like they're obligated to meet the needs of their family.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel like that sacrificial kind of nature. Oh, family comes first. You know, I don't know if you know collectivistic cultures, like Asian cultures mostly, and I know the Hispanic cultures. Individualistic cultures are better at standing up for themselves. So, and also women are, because they're more emotional, they're more in touch with their emotions, they are more likely to do things for themselves.
Men, get a manicure. And
And men, on the other hand, are asked to, you know, rough it out, be a man, like don't be such a pansy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're more prone to neglecting their needs, which is why there's a rise in the number of people, you know, young men committing suicide, falling into depression. That number is escalating. I think that's the reason why they're not, society doesn't give them that permission to, you know, just to explore their feelings. Mm-hmm. And the expectations on them are extremely high. So I think a lot of them are crumbling under that pressure. Mm.
We also know traditionally that men live, their lifespans are shorter than women's.
Yeah.
And they die of a heart attack much faster.
Because they don't know how to process their feelings. Mm. And I feel bad for them. I really do.
How can women, let's say you're a woman, how can women support men in this crazy times that we're living in, where they have these unrealistic pressures? And, you know, as a man, you also have an inherent need to provide, to kind of, you know, be the leader of the tribe, or like your tribe being your family.
Yeah.
And with inflation going up, you know, there's, of course, there are two sides of this coin, right? And you can see the cup is half full or half empty. But generally, how can women like support men in this crazy times?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'd recommend knowing their love language.
Love language. Tell us about it.
I'm going to try to explain this without like butchering the concept. But basically, we have different ways in which we give and receive love.
Yeah.
There are five of them. I think there's acts of service, words of affirmation, physical touch. So just knowing which ones that your man has, your partner has, is going to really, really help you. And then secondly, observe them. Observe them, listen to them, because men are not, in general, men aren't as communicative as women are. And they express themselves very differently. Watch their patterns, watch their facial expressions. Just all you need to do is just be present with them. And that applies to any human being. And trust me, you would be surprised how much you'd notice about them. If you're tuned into them in the real sense of the word, you'd be able to pick up that something is off. The people I'm closest to, I will know when something is off. Because I know their patterns. I know them. I get them, right? So when there's something off, I'd be like, hey, what's up? Like, something is wrong here, even if without them saying a word.
And if you pay enough attention, then you're able to figure this out much easily, because traditionally, and even now, a lot of people aren't paying attention.
They're not.
They're not present in the moment, and our brains are exceptional at pattern recognition.
Absolutely.
We are actually, we navigate the world by having a lot of this pattern recognition systems built into centers of our brain, because if you had to always figure things out, your brain's going to use a lot of energy, and the brain doesn't like it. So it creates these shortcuts, these hacks around it.
Yeah.
But again, for noticing all of this, you have to be more present.
Yeah. And humans are creatures of habit. Most of them are pretty set in their ways, especially if they're on the older side. So past 25, I'm going to say. So because before that, kids are a bit erratic in general.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because there are different centers of the brain, and the logical centers of the brain, which has like seven
not
levels.
Not fully developed yet.
Yes, I the prefrontal that, yeah. cortex. Yes. That's why they land up in jails and like they'll
get into an accident. Yeah, actually, it's the most dangerous age gap, right? Like I think late teens to early 20s. That's why all these extremist groups tend to recruit from that age group, because they're so moldable. They're so vulnerable, you know, all these... Yeah, so that's a dangerous age. So if you're a parent, make sure, you know, make sure they have the right... make sure you're present. Watch them. Like, don't be paranoid, but keep an eye on them. Don't let them just... Especially with, like, the internet now, God knows what they're watching. You get all kinds of things. Like, there's a lot of brainwashing that happens on the internet. And these echo chambers will just tell you what you want to hear. And I once wrote an article about... you know, extremist groups. And I interviewed a couple of people, and they said how, they explained how they were recruited. They were made to watch certain videos. They were absolutely brainwashed.
Whoa.
They're absolutely brainwashed. Cult groups, that's it, cult groups. What they went through, the whole orientation process. Like, the human mind is like, it can you can change it in whatever way you want. Mm-hmm. If you give them enough stimuli and you keep repeating it again and again, and the person is open and willing to take that in, mm-hmm. you can believe anything. Mm-hmm. People believe what? The Earth was the center of the universe. I mean, it's like you can believe anything. People have believed all kinds of crazy things in history, mm-hmm. and they still do now. Mm-hmm. So
now people think they're the center of everything.
Pretty much, yeah. So guard your mind, mm-hmm. guard it. Like, have a proper mental diet. What are you taking in? Who are you? Who do you have around mm-hmm. you? You know, I'm very careful about my mental diet and who I listen to and what I read, what I watch. I guard it.
But it's so difficult for kids, like you were mentioning, because A, they don't have enough life experience to know what what's right, what's wrong. Mm. Parents are working. Yeah. They're busy with their own stuff. They don't have enough attention on what's going on. And especially the algorithm, the way it works. Like, for example, if you're scrolling through content, mm-hmm. right, on Instagram, mm-hmm. within a minute, you can scroll through 90 feet of information.
That's crazy.
So we're looking at maybe in a 5 minute window, you can look anywhere between like 400 to 500 feet of information.
Yeah.
And most people will have like 8 hours of screen time, 7 hours of screen time. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult.
Yeah. So I'm not a parenting expert, but I can offer a resource. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of Dr. Shefali. Yes. I had her on my podcast a couple of years ago. So she has brilliant books on parenting, conscious parenting. So I'd recommend checking out her mm-hmm. books, her videos. She even has some online courses. So she would help you in that respect if you're a parent worried about your children.
Interesting. I read a blog of yours,
which
was around decision making. And there was about decision making and decision making fatigue. Yeah. And there was a stat in there which blew my mind away. I think it was from the University of Minnesota. And they said that an average person makes 35,000 decisions every day.
Yeah.
As soon as I read that, I was like, what?
Yeah.
35,000 decisions. And with every decision, our brain gets tired.
Yeah.
And we get to decision-making fatigue. So tell, if someone who's never heard about this, like, what is decision-making fatigue? And how often do people get it?
You described it perfectly. That's exactly what it is. I mean, our brain, our mind has a limited bandwidth. Mm-hmm. So after a certain point, and because making decisions, it requires a lot of energy. It requires a lot of cognitive energy and even emotional, if it's an emotional decision. Mm-hmm. Well, most decisions involve emotion to a certain extent. And we have a very limited reserve of energy. So after a certain point, we just can't think straight. We lose our sense of logic and our reptilian brain starts taking over. Our subconscious mind takes over. And that part of our brain is not the best at making decisions. You want the logical mind to be involved. Mm-hmm. And especially, that's why they say don't make important decisions when you're tired, when you're hungry, because you're just not in the right frame of mind to do that. Delay it as much as possible. So if you have decision fatigue, do something to limit your options, like whittle down your schedule if you can, and make your most important decisions in the morning or whenever you feel you're like the most alert. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just be wary of that, because in modern day life, that is a really big phenomenon that you have to be wary of.
Yeah,
you know, I try to limit my decisions as much as possible. Like, I try to automate my life. Mm-hmm. I know a good person, James Clear, he talks about this a lot.
Atomic
Habits. Automate your life as much as possible so that you don't have to use your mind all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I eat the same thing. Like, I have a little bit of variety on the weekends, but I eat pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. I have, like, my wardrobe. I have certain clothes I know when I'm going to wear. And, you know, I've organized it. So it's just making sure you're aware of like what suits you, and then kind of just put that into your life and automate it. I think that will limit the number of decisions you have to make. And I always envy like the locals or anyone who wears a uniform, because it's like
they wear the same.
It's like you wear the same. I know Barack Obama. I think he had like only one or two T-shirts he chose when he was president. Mm-hmm. So because he had so many decisions to make, so he's like, I'm not sure how many, probably two, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, people. But yeah, he would just like, he's going to wear a blue shirt or a gray shirt that's it, you know, that I don't want to complicate my life in that matter, because then in the morning I have to make all kinds of you know, very important decisions that impact the country and the whole world potentially.
This is also the same reason why, at least earlier, you would see Mark Zuckerberg in the same t-shirt.
Exactly.
You see Steve Jobs in the same t-shirt.
Why do they do that?
It's because they don't want to take that decision next morning, right? So it's just like easy. Like, you want to eat the same, you get to eat the same things.
Yeah, because I know it works. Yeah. It works. It's getting me the results I want. So, you know, if it ain't broken, don't fix it, as the saying goes.
I like to tell people, like, one easy thing that they can do or they can implement in their life is that they can spend 10 minutes at the end of their day and write down all the kind of decisions they will be taking for the next day. So this way, what are you going to wear? Simple things. What shoes are you going to have? Because some people, like, I know a lot of people will spend like 10 to 15 minutes contemplating on what shoes will look good with their dress, or, you know.
Women, mostly.
Nowadays, even men, like, you know. And these are simple.
The metrosexuals.
Yeah. There are simple decisions which you can do, and you can create this sort of like a
system.
Yeah, system. A system. Like an automated system.
Yes.
And I think our brain likes that because of the same thing that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
We
find comfort. We feel we find comfort in predictability.
Mm-hmm.
We do need some variety. We need some spontaneity. But for the most part, we like things to be predictable. I mean, it's different for every person. I know a certain personality test will show you. I think the Big Five will show you how open you are to novelty and change. For some people, it's more. Mm-hmm. Some people, it's less. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there are some people who like their routine and want to do the same thing all the time, and that's a bit too much. So I guess we all have different requirements on that front.
It also depends on some of it. There's a genetic influence to it, and there is an influence of neurochemistry where your brain secretes certain kind of neurochemicals, or it's not able to secrete some kind of neurochemicals. And because of that, some people tend to have this novelistic approach to life, which is me, because for me, like, in my genes, I have a certain genotype which doesn't create or actually burns up any available dopamine really fast. That's why I love to create new things. I always am in the creator mode. I always want to explore new things. I always want to jump to new things.
Yeah.
It's because the availability of dopamine pool in my brain gets used up so fast. And of course, there's ways around it.
How did you find that out?
You can do a genetic test.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can do a
I would like to know.
you can do a genetic test. It can tell you a lot of things.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there are other esoteric stuff as well, which kind of, like, you know, the memory, your DNA memory, the memory of your ancestors, your whole karmic footprint, all of these things influence the way you are at the moment.
Yes.
Of course, you have a conscious choice, but sometimes it's difficult.
Yes.
Interesting. Celine, I can keep on talking to you for hours.
Is it 1 hour already?
We're almost at the end of this podcast. Wow. So let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
If you had a time machine and you could go back in time to a younger self, to your younger self, what would be that one piece of advice you would give yourself?
How young are we talking?
Your choice. I'll leave the remote control in your hand. You can go as far as you want.
Well, I have to admit that I have, for the longest time, I was very critical of my younger self. I'm like, man, you should have done this right. You should have done that right. And so, and it's something I've had to actually work on to have compassion for myself when I was younger, because they say that you do the best you can at the level of consciousness you had at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would probably tell my younger self, don't worry so much and trust yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Trust your dreams. Trust the inclinations that you're getting, because there is some truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't allow society to drown that voice within you.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many times we doubt ourselves. We're like, am I doing the right thing? Is this the way I'm supposed to be running my life? So don't give in to societal pressure and really listen to yourself and find a support system. I wish I found a group of kindred spirits who was able to get me and really give me the guidance that I needed. So, yeah, I would say that stay tuned into your inner voice, find a good support system, and don't let the voices of society drown
you. And don't worry,
and don't drown that wisdom within you. Trust it more. Trust it.
When is your book launching? What is exciting for you now?
My book. I am super excited because it's my baby. You know, I've been working on it for a couple of years now. It'll come out in September, but it's available for pre-order now. And
we'll put the link in the show notes so everyone can go and grab your copy of The Nomadic Soul.
Yes.
Celine, it's been an amazing time.
Yes.
I loved our conversation. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for doing all the great work that you're doing. You've inspired so many lives, so many people.
Thank you so much.
You bring in so much of this new way of, not new way, but like a more realized, a more conscious, a more, I would say even a more effective way of just being.
Thank you.
Which a lot of people have benefited from. I personally benefited a lot from this conversation. I can tell you this.
Thank you. I really received that. Thank you so much. And I have to say congratulations on your work and all the wonderful content you're putting out there and being a pioneer for health and wellness.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, where you're part of the team. You're part of the Lightworker team.
Exactly.
And from one host to another, you're really good.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Also want to mention my podcast, the Dreamcatcher podcast.
Of course. We never spoke about that.
Yeah. I've got an archive of over 400 episodes. That includes 160 interviews with spiritual leaders, with best-selling authors. So definitely check that out.
Yes, please. Everyone, go and subscribe wherever your favorite podcast station is.
Yeah.
And you have a YouTube as well, right?
Yes. So we do audio and video.
Go to YouTube, go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify,
subscribe to Dreamcatcher Podcast.
Dreamcatcher Podcast with Celine.
Yes.
And this is me, CJ, your host, signing out of the Shift for CJ Podcast. Everyone, have a great week, a great lifetime ahead of you. And remember, do not lower that voice that's coming from inside. It's telling you something. Be curious, be conscious, take a pause, listen to it, and remember, no matter what you do, don't worry, because life will always play out well. See you in the next podcast. Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.